the story of Noah. From the standpoint of looking at a hero of the faith who listened and obeyed. Tomorrow night we're going to look at Moses and look at his service. On Wednesday night we're going to look at Job and look at his endurance. On Thursday night we're going to look at the trust that Daniel had. And on Friday night we'll close our study with one another by looking at the love that Jesus Christ had for all of us. For that we're thankful. Trusting as Daniel did really has to come from the idea of learning from God. And that's what we're going to study tonight about Noah. Thank you so much for your presence here. I hope that you had an opportunity to read through the text. If you didn't, I think most of us probably know the story of Noah well enough and know everything involved in that, so we can go through this relatively quickly and really spend probably the lion's portion of our study looking at some things that we learned from Noah in regard to listening. So let's just read through chapter 6, and we'll start drawing points from our lesson. First of all, Genesis chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. When man began to multiply on the face of the land, and the daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive. They took their wives, any they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. And they were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every intention of the thoughts of his heart were on evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and the animals and the creeping things and the birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all the flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark, and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, its breadth 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above, and set the door of the ark on its side. Make it with a lower, second, and third decks. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your son, your wife, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds according to their kind, and of the animals according to their kind, of every creeping thing on the ground according to its kind, two of every sort shall come into you to keep them alive. Also take with you every sort of food that is eaten and stored up. It shall serve as food for you and for them. Noah did this and did all that God commanded him. As Adam said just a moment ago, I'm going to conduct this like a class tonight, so I certainly encourage your participation, any questions that you have, any thoughts, especially when we get to the latter part as we talk about the lessons that we learn. I've got a number of lessons. If you've got a handout, you see a number I've given there, and we'll go through those. But you may have some lessons that you see, and we would benefit from sharing those with one another. So let's go through the story of Noah. First thing I want us to consider is the doomed world that stopped listening to God. We find early on, as God is interacting with the patriarchs, that He is guiding them. But somewhere along the way, between when He interacted with Adam and with Cain and tried to talk Cain out of doing what Cain was going to do, somewhere along the way, people stopped listening to God. And what you find then is a world that's really, really wicked. Notice in particular verse 5 and then verse 13 of chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 5, we are told, "The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was on evil continually." Now, from this text, tell me some things that the people were doing that were wicked. I find at least two things that stand out. Adam? All right. All right. So you notice in verse 13, God said to Noah, "I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them." When God made man, who was man made in the image of? God, right? All right. And what God wanted was for man to represent him on the earth. And yet man had moved to the point where every thought of his being was on evil and violence. All right. So violence would be one. The world is a very, very violent place for Noah and his family and anyone to be living in. There's something else that's mentioned in the first part of the chapter. Verses 1, 2, and 3, regarding marriage. What was happening in marriage? What was happening in marriage? All right. So you have, and we can spend a lot of time talking about this, the sons of God and the daughters of men coming together and marrying. And this does not seem to be something, in fact, as you start seeing everything spiraling out of control there, this doesn't seem to be a good thing. Now, who are the sons of God? Who are the daughters of men? There are a lot of ideas been put forth. The Jewish view, traditional view, is the sons of God were angels, okay, who were coming down and they were having sexual relations with women. And some people have argued that, and I guess that could be it. I guess among our fellowship, probably the traditional view is the sons of God were the righteous descendants of Seth, and the daughters of men were the descendants of Cain. And there you have the godly lineage and the ungodly coming together, and eventually the godly become ungodly. My intention is not for us to go into that tonight, but I do want to point out that what you find is a situation where morally everything is just going south, and it's going south really quickly. So God had given instructions to the patriarchs, and those instructions would have been passed down. Somewhere along the way, people stop listening. And they start doing their own thing. They start doing what they want to do. And so we find in verse 6 this statement that is found. In verse 6, "And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart." Verse 7, "So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the earth of the land, from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them." Now that's an interesting question. How can an all-knowing God regret that he had made man? While you're waiting, one time I was teaching a class, and I asked the question, threw it out to the class, and I was waiting for an answer, and one of the people in the class said, "You're the preacher, you're supposed to know." So that may be what you're thinking now. Okay, classes go better when somebody throws something. So how is it that God, an all-knowing God, regretted making man? Adam.
The reason, the reason Noah was spared was because of his righteousness. The implication is there wasn't another person on the face of the earth. So I think what we're seeing here is not God saying, "I had no idea."
Yeah.
And be wicked, but look at how wicked they've become to the point where
Yeah.
So the idea that you're suggesting is that God regretted that man had come to the point that he was going to have to discipline him the way he was going to have to.
Even beyond just, he was going to have to.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Matt. Yeah. So what do you do with that? Let me suggest another idea, and this is not in contradiction to what Adam said, but just something else to think about. So Adam, you guys, Alexander cut his foot the other day, right? Okay. Traumatic experience. Now with two boys, you know someone's going to get hurt in your family at some point, right? That is a foregone conclusion, but it still breaks your heart when it happens. That's the way I've always looked at this. It's not that God did not know that a man was going to sin. As Adam said in Ephesians, Paul makes it very clear that from the foundation of the world, God knew that he would send Jesus Christ. God always knew that man would sin. But when it sinned, and to the magnitude that when it happened, and to the magnitude that it happened, that, if we could put it in our vernacular, that broke God's heart. All right? So I think from that, we are not to take from this that God, as Adam said, was surprised. That God didn't know this was going to happen. I believe that God did know it. But knowing something will happen and then it taking place are two different things. So you see this world that's a really, really rotten world. Now, we can sit back today and we can think about the world we live in. And I would suggest to you that though the world we live in is a really bad place in some ways, we're not really where they were at this point. At this point, every thought of man was on evil and violence, always. That's pretty bad, guys. I know we struggle today with abortion, and we struggle today with homosexuality, and we struggle today with racism. We struggle today with numerous sins that are just prevalent in our society, and it breaks our hearts when we see them. Let me tell you, it could get a lot worse. And it might be moving in that direction at some point in the future. So this is the world, right? And it is a doomed world that we are first introduced to here. But then we find a graced man who listens. Right? This is really, really important to this whole narrative. In chapter 6, we are introduced to Noah after God says in verse 7, I am sorry that I have made them. Verse 8 says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. So Noah stands as a person of contrast. Here you've got this rotten world that's just moving in the wrong direction. And in contrast, you've got Noah. And Noah is a man who, first of all, we are told he finds grace or he finds favor in God's eyes. What does grace or favor mean here? All right. God looked upon Noah and Noah still got it. Now, this is not just an arbitrary grace. God's not just going to look upon someone and go, this guy right here. There are certain things that qualify Noah to be found favorable in God's eyes. And what we find of him in verse 9 is that he was a just or a righteous man. What that means is when the world was going in this direction, he was moving in this direction. He was a man who listened to God. He was aware of what was right, of appropriate behavior, and he was trying to live in a way that pleased God. That's really important. The whole world's going south. Noah is fighting against the grain. What do you think it would have been like for Noah living in that world? You think it would have been tough? You get frustrated going on social media and seeing all this stuff, and it vexes your heart. What do you think it did to Noah? And Noah's got kids, and he, like any parent, is trying to make sure he brings his children up properly. Wants to make sure his children marry good women. So he's a righteous man. He's a just man. But we're also told that he was a perfect man. Or, I think the New King James translation says he was a blameless man. Now, what do you make of that? Is that telling us that Noah never sinned? Noah never made a mistake? Is that what we're to take from that? Adam? Okay.
And incredibly, you know, I'd be interested in maybe your thoughts on this one of seven, where God has had two people relatively in this generation. It's almost as though, and I'm not really concerned that before, but God is even specifying here in this generation.
Yeah.
You know, as bad as it is, you are right to the point. So he wasn't an absolutely sinless man, otherwise he would not have been raised of God. But
yeah. He was a good man. He was trying to obey God. And I believe to whatever extent sacrifices were made, we certainly know from, and we'll see in our study of Job, that Job made sacrifices for his children. And Job, we believe, to be a contemporary of the patriarchs. Job made sacrifices for his children in case they had sinned in some way that needed to be dealt with and taken care of. So I think from that whatever was required, sacrifices or whatever at this point, Noah did it. Okay, and I think you make an interesting point. There is something about this generation where things had come to. Enoch, that you find in the previous chapter, Enoch walked with God. Right. So there were people in previous generations who had done what was right. But it seems like by the time we come to chapter 6, there's one guy in his family who's trying to do right. And that's Noah. And everyone else, they've just gone their own way. And that's when God decides, that's it. I don't look forward to this, but I've got to deal with this situation. Brother Thompson. Yeah. So because things were so violent, Brother Thompson brings up, it must have been very difficult for him to be righteous. And I would add to that, Noah must have had to show a lot of wisdom. Who do you deal with in a world like that? Who do you trade with? Who do you engage in commerce with as you go about your business as a person living in society? And how do you let, if we could bring in New Testament language, how do you let your light shine in a world like that? Somewhere Noah found the way to do it. And I would suggest to you as we sort of go through the rest of this lesson, Noah had listened to those who came before him, and Noah had taken it to heart so that he was just and he was perfect, and Noah walked with God. I said a moment ago, we see that same phrase with Enoch. I think by that it simply means that they were in union with God. They lived in such a way that they were in a daily action with God that was appropriate. And God accepted fellowship with them. And I think all of this goes back to one attribute, and that is he listened. Right? Noah listened to God. And we add to that, Noah obeyed. So what you see is a picture in which the whole world is about to be destroyed. And the only person in his family who will not be is a man who exhibits this characteristic of listening and obeying. So the latter part of chapter 6, he is given instructions on how to build an ark. The Hebrew word for ark means box. Right? I don't know how many of you have been to the ark exhibit up in northern Kentucky, but you've all seen pictures, right, of it. How many of you have been there? Raise your hand. It's okay to raise your hand. How many of you have seen pictures of the one up in northern Kentucky? Most of us have. More than likely, the ark that Noah built did not look like that one. Right? I'm not advocating this, but there's a movie that came out a number of years ago called Noah. It's a horribly unbiblical movie in a lot of ways. But I will say this, if you saw it, more than likely, the ark that was built in that movie probably better reflected the way the actual ark would have been. All right? Probably wouldn't have had this nice bow to it, you know, the large wood structure in the front. Probably didn't have the curvature there around the bottom part of the boat. It probably was just a big box. And it had one purpose. That one purpose of this big box was to keep people alive and keep animals alive. This was not a cruise. This was not something built for comfort. It was built for survival. So, you may have noticed if you are reading the King James or the New King James translation that when you look at the dimensions of the ark, in verse 15 in the New King James translation, what are you told is the length of the ark?
300
cubits. Okay. 300 cubits. That's pretty big, right? Okay. A cubit, we believe, is about a foot and a half. I say we believe because there's some question, but the general consensus is that you're dealing with something that was a little larger than the length of a football field. Okay. That's a lot of wood, guys. That's a big structure. Probably somewhere around 75 feet wide, 45 feet tall. Now, Noah and his family are going to build this. No power tools. They don't have a 84 lumber that they go and get the wood from. They've got to go get the wood. They've got to prepare the wood. And they've got to put this ark together. What type of wood did they use? Gopher wood. What type of wood is gopher wood? Only gophers know, right? We don't know what type of wood gopher wood is. In fact, I remember when we went, we haven't been to the Ark exhibit, but we went to the Creation Museum years ago, and they suggested from their research that gopher wood may have been a particular way of treating the wood. I don't know if that's true or not. But we do know that he was told the particular type of wood that was to be used. How many floors did this Ark have? Three floors, all right? Anything else that was unique about the ark? What was that? Okay, it had one window, one door. Some have suggested that this window, we think of a window like this, may have been an opening all around the top layer of the ark. I don't know if that was the case or not. But you would think about the fact there needs to be some ventilation in this ark. So then Chapter 7 starts telling us, and we'll get back to the end of verse 6 in a moment. Chapter 7 starts telling us about the animals that are going to come on when the destruction of the world takes place. I say the deaf world because they weren't listening to God. And because they weren't listening, all this comes on. How many animals went onto the ark? I don't mean number. I mean when the animals came in by kind, how many animals came on? Okay, two of every unclean animal, seven of every clean animal. Why do you think seven? What happened to one of those animals, the clean animals, when they came out of the ark? They sacrificed. So, you know, some have said the seven is the perfect number. Maybe that's the case, but it does seem to me that when one was sacrificed, now you have three pairs. The big question that begins to come up then is, well, how do you get all those animals on an ark? You read skeptic literature online, and that's one of the things they throw out. Really? I mean, do you really believe that this guy pulled together an ark and two of every animal, or seven of some animals, actually got on the ark? So what do you do with that? Okay. Very likely God brought them to him. Well, we are told they brought him. How did he bring them? I don't know, but did he put it within them instinctually? But he brought them. How do you get all the animals on the ark? And then how do you feed all these animals? Okay, Adam? Yeah.
So you don't need every single type of full-grown adults of every one of those men.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you talk to the skeptic about that, there are some responses just to the animal themselves.
Yeah. First of all, very good point. You're not talking about two, or actually, dogs would be considered unclean, so there'd be two dogs, two cats. You're not looking at two German Shepherds, two Golden Retrievers, two Cocker Spaniels. You're looking at two dogs. And guess what? Two cats. All right? Then Adam makes another very good point. It's a good thing you guys have him here. Adam makes another good point, and that is they don't have to be full size. Do you know the average size of an animal on the planet Earth? The size of a sheep. Okay. That changes the way you look at this, right? Because we're thinking of large, you know, elephants and things like that. The average size of, if you take all animals and average them out, a sheep. A sheep's not terribly big. All right. Then Adam brings up another good point. You don't have to get adults there. So if you have a baby elephant, how big is a baby elephant? Well, I mean, it's not that large. It didn't have to be a full-grown animal, right? So you have, and then you have a lot of insects. Okay, insects don't take up a lot of space. So my point is that when you really start thinking about this, you start realizing that the animals don't have to be full-grown. You're not dealing with one of every specific type of animal that we have today. And if they're smaller animals, how much are they going to eat? Not as much as a full-grown animal. Keep in mind, too, that this ark is built for survival, and so probably everything was on a ration. Probably when everything came out of the ark, it was probably pretty hungry. Okay, the whole purpose was for it to survive. So how many animals were on there? Different creation models offer different numbers. Some have suggested maybe 16,000 animals. Some have suggested maybe 75,000, maybe up to 125,000. But depending on the size of the animals, you could get those animals into a confined area for, you're going to find, for 5 months. It's going to be a tight voyage. No one said this was fun for Noah and his family. But if you start thinking about it and looking at it, it is very reasonable to believe that Noah, in building this ark, a little larger than a football field, reasonably had the space to put all these animals that really would have been relatively small. I was looking at this. Mass-wise, you had three floors, somewhere around 100 square feet of storage space on this ark. 100 square feet. Storage containers that are used to cross the ocean and put things in, they carry somewhere around 520 square feet of storage in them. Okay? And I read this, I'm not sure who did this, but they said you could probably put somewhere around 150 sheep into one of those. Start doing the math, it's very doable, the number of animals that would have been on the ark. Brother David, you have your hand up a moment ago? That's right. Yeah, very good point. Brother Thompson. Yeah. Yeah, very good point, very good point. Brother David brought up the idea of hibernation of some kind. Maybe God put them in a hibernation. I don't know. What I want you to think about before we... Brother Fox?
This ark was mainly a dark place. And, I mean, they just didn't wire it for electricity.
Yeah. They didn't have a casino deck. Right. And they didn't have, you know, the exercise deck and all those things that we think of today.
Mm-hmm. But that was, most people have cats, have dogs. If they're gone and it's a dark day, the dog probably goes to sleep.
Yeah.
and doesn't really stir about anymore until they get home.
Mm-hmm. So because it was so dark, they probably were a little more lethargic. How often do you think Noah had built a boat before this?
Never.
Probably never. Who do you think around Noah built an ark of any kind? No, nobody. So here's another thing that I want us to just, before we move on, really make sure we understand. Noah was told by God to build an ark, and we are told at that point that a mist came up from the ground. It's even possible that it had not rained at all. I don't know that for sure, but it's possible it hadn't rained before. And when God's saying, I'm going to flood the earth and the waters are going to come down from the heavens, Noah may not have ever had any idea what that was like. My point is that not only was he listening to God, but when God was telling him to do something that no one around him did, and he had never heard of anyone doing before, he still was willing to obey. Matt. Yeah.
So, you know, all these questions that we tend to come up with, you know, it's not that Noah was an ignorant man who wouldn't ask him those same questions, but he obeyed. He listened. And it's just phenomenal. And he knew what was going to happen before he started doing it.
Right. So, what you see as you look at Noah is when the world is destroyed, the animals are saved, the flood takes place. It goes through chapter 8. 5 months they were on the ark. The rains fell down for 40 days and 40 nights. 5 months the waters were on the earth. They began to recede. The ark settled on Mount Ararat. I believe it was the 10th month. The waters began to recede to the point where the top of the mountains were seen. And then it's after a whole year on the ark. Okay. After a whole year, things are finally set for Noah and his family to begin to leave. So God had proved a point, and you say, well, who did he prove the point to? He proved a point to the following generations. Noah was a godly man, but Noah is now going to tell his children, well, his children are going to tell his grandchildren, and every generation after this, when you fail to listen to God, there are consequences. You've got to make sure you listen to what God tells you, because one day the world did not listen to God. And God caused the flood and destroyed everyone. Listen to me. You've got to listen to God. And that was the message that was passed down for generations to come. So what we find at the very end is what we will call the hope of a listening world. Oh, Brother Randy. Yeah.
He didn't just half-heartedly go and say, well, I'll make it about 300.
Yeah.
He made it what was going. So the compliance there was 100%.
Yeah, very good point. By the way, do you realize that the proportions of the ark are the same proportions that are used today for barges? If you draw this out to scale, you can put that on top of a barge that you see on the mighty Ohio River. And I think that's fascinating. And God in His wisdom understood that this was the best, even though, as Brother Bob pointed out, it was God who made all this work and God would have kept it afloat. But it's interesting that God in His wisdom gave him these proportions that we even still use today. Another point before we move on. Did Noah's compliance with what God told him to do Did that imply to us that Noah understood everything that God wanted of him? No. I wasn't sure if I was asking that in a way that you could really understand what I was asking. The point I was trying to make a while ago is Noah may have never seen rain. He had probably never seen a boat. He'd certainly never seen anyone make a boat. But his compliance with what God told him to do was based upon God telling him and not his own understanding. And I think that's an important point for us to make. So this whole story concludes once everyone, the ark was opened up, animals were sacrificed. What we find in verses 20 through 22 of chapter 8 and in chapter 9 as well, a promise that God makes. Verse 20, Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and burnt offerings and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasant aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man. For the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Never will I again ever strike down every living creature as I've done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. And then you find, as you look in chapter 9, verse 11, I establish my covenant with you, and never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is a sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between you and me and every living creature of all flesh. And the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. So you see God now promising that he has proven his point, he has established his law, and an understanding that he is to be listened to and obeyed, and he is not going to need to do this ever again. And all of it goes back to Noah's willingness to listen to God and to obey God. So that's the story. So let's talk now about the lessons that we can learn from Noah. Okay. Now, I've got a number here. Before we start getting into those, I've got till 8 o'clock. Yes? 10 till. I was going to ask you for your lessons that you learned, but I don't have time for you to tell me yours. I've only got time to go through mine. All right, so what do we learn from all this? Well, first of all, the very obvious answer is the need to make sure that we listen to God. Oh, that is the underlying fact that you get out of this. Noah was righteous and just because he listened to God. Noah found favor in God's eyes because he listened to God. So this is my question to you. What does it mean to listen to God? That's right. God has not left it up to us to figure out what's right and what's wrong. God has always, certainly when we see the law of Moses and the law of Christ today, we have it written down. But before that, it was passed out verbally. And it was passed down from generation to generation. The main lesson we need to learn from this is we learn from God by listening to God. And you and I are blessed today. We've got the Word of God. We've got the Bible. I mean, you think about this. I don't have time to go into this. You think about this. Our Bibles today are relatively new inventions. I don't mean that they haven't been around before. But until the 20th century, there was not the proliferation of Bibles that we have today. Certainly not all the translations. He had the King James translation, and that was it for a long time. And then the Revised came along, and then the American Standard. But you don't have all the translations we have today. And by the way, some are really, really bad translations, but some are good. ESV, New King James, American Standard, New American Standard. Okay, those are all good translations. You lose your Bible, it doesn't cost hundreds of dollars for you to go get a new one. I mean, if you want one that's leather-bound, calfskin, you can spend that kind of money. But you can go down to the dollar store and pick up a Bible. 200 years ago, people would have killed for that. They didn't have that then. You and I would suggest, have a greater responsibility in some ways because the Word of God in our lives is so common. You don't want to pick one up? Download the app on your phone and listen to it. Okay? 200 years ago, they would have freaked out over that. What do you mean I'm riding a horse? I can listen to the Bible. We can do that in our cars all the time, can't we? So the main way that we learn is to listen to God's Word. But listening to God's Word and obeying are two different things, right? One of the things preachers figure out pretty quickly is this. People can listen to words. That doesn't mean that they're listening to what you're actually saying. The proof is going to be in the pudding, guys. James says, be doers of the word, not hearers only. Why is obedience difficult for us? That's the question. Why is obedience difficult?
Okay.
So sometimes we're just too proud. Very good reason. Why else? Adam? I know it is, isn't it? And I've got four other points to make here. I will tell you, I've been preaching for more than 20 years. There are some things, some commands of God that I find written down that I don't understand why they're the way they are. And there are, between us, I say between us, this could be online, so it's not between us. But just, honestly, if I could change some things in the New Testament, I would. Because sometimes I don't get why God has commanded what He has commanded. But I do trust Him. And I do understand that while I may not see the wisdom of it, God's wisdom is greater than my wisdom. So sometimes, what do we say? Trust and obey. We have to make sure we listen. We need to make sure that we obey. Brother Thompson. All right. Very good. All right. Faith is the thing that causes people, we don't have faith, we're prideful, we are willful. So there are all these different reasons why we will not obey. The only way we will be blessed by God, Noah teaches us, is if we listen to God and obey. And that's going to mean we have to humble ourselves. Humble yourselves in the eyes of the Lord, and He will lift you up. You want to live your own way. And more than likely, you being here tonight, you are someone who will be submissive in life. But if you're here tonight because someone made you be here, and you this all this religion stuff, you don't have anything for it sometimes, you can live any way you want to live. God gives you the free will, but there are going to be consequences. And that's just the way things are. Read the end of Proverbs chapter 1. Wisdom is personified as a woman crying out for people to come and heed her warning. But she says, because you didn't listen, there's a storm coming. And you're going to have to deal with that. Okay, so first of all, the need to listen and obey. This was not in your list, so if you picked up the sheet, just write this to the side. When we stray from God's instructions for our lives, chaos is the inevitable result. That's what happened to the world. When people started turning away from God, things are going to go south very quickly. I won't spend any more time on that one. Number three, Defiance and rebellion incur God's wrath. You can do what you want to do, but you cannot do what you want to do without consequences again. And God's wrath is pretty total. You know Timothy McVeigh, Oklahoma City bomber? In one of his final interviews, they asked him, because he said he was an unbeliever, they said, "What if you're wrong? And what if there's a hell?" And he said, "Well, I'll just survive it like I do everything else." Well, let me tell you, dude, you'll survive in that you will exist for all eternity. But this isn't something that you're going to get through. And you're not going to get through hell. Hell is overwhelming. So why would a good God send someone to hell? Because a good God has given us instructions for our good. And He wants to use us, like He used Noah, to be of use to other people. And when we don't submit ourselves to God, we are not of use to Him. And we're the ones in rebellion, just like this world. Defiance and rebellion incur God's wrath. Number four, God still provides salvation today. Isn't that great? There's still grace given to those who are seeking God's favor. Now, you got to drink that one in. The world seems so rotten sometimes, and we think sometimes it's just going to be impossible for us to be saved. But God still provides salvation. And who is the instrument of His salvation today? This is not difficult. Jesus. In the time of Noah, it was the ark. But Jesus is the one. And we enter into Jesus today. And God longs to save us. God longs to bring us along. But you and I have to choose what we're going to do. Brother Andy? Okay. Maybe in the lives of other people, right? What do we sing sometimes? We are the only Bible a sinful world will know. Maybe our interaction with other people will be such that they may come to the Word of God and they may come to know Christ. Right? But God still provides salvation today. God's intention of creating a people with whom He can have fellowship, that didn't change with the flood. The only reason Noah and his family were allowed to live is because God still intended to have fellowship with man. He still longed to have fellowship with man. And He still saves today. And He saves through Jesus Christ. And may I say this? Do I just need to be quiet at 10 till, or will there be a bell or something? Okay, so I have until I start seeing kids out there. Okay. Isn't it interesting that we are not told anything about the faith of Noah's wife or his children? The only one we're told about his faith was Noah. I don't think, I'm not suggesting there that Noah's wife and his children had no faith. But I'm saying that the one for whom it was important was Noah as the head of his family. And let me just throw this out here for you men who are fathers. You need to make sure that you've got faith and you follow the Lord so that your children and your wives will have the opportunity to follow you as well. Last point, God still provides salvation for us today. He still gives His mercy and grace to us, and He still provides the ark, and that is Jesus Christ. And just as Noah and his family went into the ark, we are baptized what? Into Christ. It's all by His grace, guys. It's all by His grace. But God, in giving us this means of salvation, expects us to listen, and He expects us to obey. All right. Brother Fox, last point.
All that whole thing was for 8 people. So the number doesn't really matter to God.
Right. So that was for 8 people. God did all this for 8 people. Every soul is important to God. All right. Noah. A hero of listening and obeying. Tomorrow night we'll talk about Moses. Thanks a lot for your attention.